Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With expert advice and support from Vodafone, your business can make technology work for you. See vodafone.ie/business.
Now, in my executive chair today is a very interesting man who's in the world of cyber security and IT systems servicing, or something like that. We'll come on to that in a second. He is Stephen McNicholas, who is the CEO of Echo, which is a very large company, almost 1,000 staff now, 250 cyber professions alone, with operations here in Ireland, also the UK, the Netherlands, and also in Kuala Lumpur and faraway places like Cape Town in South Africa as well. He's had an association with a little bit this station a few years ago, but we'll get into all of that later on. So first of all, Stephen McNicholas, CEO of Echo, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Emmett. Thanks for the invitation.
Yes. Now, you're an electrical engineer by training, so tell us a little bit about, have you always been a computer man?
Yeah, I mean, I started back in college in the early 90s. I did a degree in electrical engineering. It was a great degree to do, and I started with a company called Motogen, who were a small managed services company that built uninterruptible power supply units and generators. So it's the idea of keeping, you know, computer networks up in real time. And we would have done a lot of big electrical power system implementations for the likes of Intel and the DAA for keeping the radio networks up, the radar networks up. And I just got involved with actually a project in Bank of Ireland about a year after graduation, which was Bank of Ireland was infamous for having a data vault built. It was called Bank Centre over in Cabinteely, and I was putting in a large generating system to keep the new network up. And it was walking in, they actually built a vault in Cabinteely in underground, and you walked in, it was like a scene out of Ocean's 11. You walked in through a big door and walked in, there was computer equipment everywhere, and I kind of hit that V in the road, and I just said I really wanted to jump into IT and into computer science, but I didn't have a qualification in that area.
Do you see yourself as a techie, or do you see yourself more as an engineer? Because they're slightly different.
Yeah, I'd be kind of more interested in the technical area than a pure play engineer, to be honest. I moved out of electrical engineering, about a year after being in it, working as an engineer. And it was quite hard to get into the IT industry at that time. It was really, we're talking about mid 90s. It was starting to really take off. But I took a view to write to a lot of IT companies around Dublin at the time. I sent out about 20 letters. There was very little companies, to engage. The digital platforms were very underdeveloped at that stage. Email was kind of just taking off. So it was the old school, write letters. I got picked up by one of the companies, a company called Anixter Distribution, and they referenced me into digital computers, who were DEC. They're actually a massive company based out of Boston. They were IBM's big rival in the 80s. They employed about 140,000 people in the heyday. They were based here in Dublin, and they started me literally on the ground floor designing cabling systems for computers.
Glamorous, eh?
Very, very glamorous. And they put me into ESB actually for a year on contract, and it was a great learning. But literally, it was ground zero.
And they say, so you've gone then from a sort of an array of networks companies, and one of them was sold out to Vodafone. You have another company called Hanley Networks in 2015.
Yeah.
You then met a man called Dennis O'Brien in 2016, who might be vaguely known around these parts. Yeah. And he brought you into a company, a cloud-based company called CTI. And it seems like your career quite vaulted forward at that point.
Yeah, I mean, like the industry was evolving massively. All right, so I mean, we had spent 4 years in Vodafone, they acquired our business. They were moving from mobile into fixed line communications, a company called Interfusion Networks, and we did a 4-year program with them, which is really important in terms of my own, I suppose, personal development, getting that access to a large corporate and a management level, and I was you know, trying to move. At that point, I was in telecoms for about, I don't know, 18, 19 years. And the whole idea of cloud computing in 2015 was really starting to take off. And I just had an opportunity to move in. And it was, as I said, it was a Dennis O'Brien home company involved in cloud computing and data and backup systems up in the cloud. And I worked for Edward 4 years with him. We had a really, really good a turn. But the market again was starting to evolve, and I could see it because we were building, you know, very, you know, enterprise-based architecture systems for big companies, and the whole cybersecurity area was really starting to evolve. And by 2020, it was very obvious that we needed to build that kind of capability within our infrastructure and environment. And, you know, I tried to do it organically. It was really, really hard, as is in the industry even today, to try and get the resources to build it. So ultimately, I knew we'd have to go on an acquisition.
You bought three Irish-based cybersecurity firms in 20. So this is just at the back end of COVID.
So CTI, so at that stage, I met two individuals, the actual original co-founders of Echo. It started in 2016. There was two guys called Owen Blacklock and Jonathan Crow. They're actually living in Malahide, the same place as I do, and I didn't know them, which is even though it's a village.
I thought everyone in Malahide knew everyone else.
There you go. So did I. So I met these two guys in a very, very small office above a shop in Malahide. We actually still have it today. It's kind of a landmark for the company. I'd never met kind of two guys like it. In fair, I'd worked obviously as CEO in operational businesses my whole life. And these guys had a similar type of background in terms of their acquisition strategy, but their company got acquired by a company called J2 Global, a big conglomerate, and they'd spent the previous 6 years building an M&A book for J2, and they bought about 50 or 60 companies. And I'd never had that access to, you know, M&A, I suppose, leadership and raising finance at that level. Everything that we did, as I said, even when Interfusion was bootstrapped, when it was in Vodafone, we bought businesses, but they were self-financed. So this was a very, very different type of talent that I was starting to develop a relationship with. So CTI was a natural glove to go into Echo. Echo was quite small at the time.
So the two were brought together.
Echo acquired CTI, and Echo is our business. And the guys were trading in the UK at that time,
We'll come on to that a bit further. But in terms of cybersecurity, obviously you're going up against some big names. Obviously the personal computer market, you know, you have your McAfee's, etc. Yeah. And then in the corporate side, you have Accenture and some of the big consultancy companies. So is it hard for you to knock on doors metaphorically and say, hire us versus these absolute giant gorilla companies? Like, is how do you make that happen? Or is it actually you sell that as your USP, that we are a bit smaller, we're a bit more attentive to the client? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I mean, look, the cybersecurity market has just seen unbelievable growth. I mean, we employ about 8,000 people in Ireland today. That market will double over the next kind of 4 years. That's according to Cyber Ireland. So there's lots of opportunity, in the market. You know, you've probably read in the last, you know, the last 4 weeks, we've had probably one of the biggest cyber events with JLR Jaguar, who produce 1,000 cars a day. Their whole production system.
And we had the HSE here in Ireland.
That was a long time in 2021. Yeah. So we're seeing massive, massive operational impact. So we really do need to continue to invest. So yes, we come up against bigger companies, but we provide a very, very agile service. We have exceptional people that are based in Ireland. One of our capabilities is that we have those 250 cyber professionals based in Ireland, where we are supplemented with some from our global services.
And are most of your services protection and defence? Or do you come in when there's a live crisis, or is it a bit both?
So everything, all the above. So, you know, we have a professional services arm which would do an awful lot of governance, risk and compliance. So they'll do testing, they'll do kind of health analysis, they'll provide a lot of governing services. We have a managed 24/7 security operations centre whereby, you know, you're actually there's teams physically managing your computer environment, looking for all that threat landscape. And then, as you pointed out there is a, you know, cyber resilience is a massive, massive part of our industry. So ultimately, you know, you've got to take on the view that you are going to be compromised, at an organizational level.
And that strikes me when I often read about these cases afterwards, and a lot of it's like extraordinarily simple. Somebody clicked on an email they shouldn't have or whatever. I mean, does that infuriate you that despite all the systems you put in, something very fundamental just lets the whole thing down?
Yeah, so it's predominantly about credentials. So you're right, it is ultimately getting access through, you know, phishing campaigns, just trying to get people to log on. And you know, we operate a kind of a strategy session within called Zero Trust. I, you know, trust nobody and validate everybody effectively. And then the second principle.
I should tell this as you came in here in a disguise into the studio.
So ultimately, you know, our principles are around that. You know, you've got to control how you validate and access people onto the network. But part of, you know, government are bringing in EU directive of NIS2 coming in now. It's all about this idea of privileged account management. How do you validate? Everybody doesn't need to have the same access. So hackers are trying to get access to what we call an administration account, whereby they can move laterally within your network. They've basically got the keys to the kingdom. So we put in privileged account management systems whereby you only can get access at a particular level.
Do you have to balance all this protection and resilience with making the service still user friendly for the customer? And we all know, listening in, I'm sure people are screaming even at the radio discussing this subject, but getting access to your bank account, your Sky account, your telecoms account, I mean, it's for us ordinary customers, it's a nightmare. Now, I know you have to do that for the resilience point, but do you have to balance the two at all?
Yeah, like technology has always had this issue between, you know, productivity and efficiency and providing a really, really top-end service versus keeping the data secure, which is on the ownership of the organisation. Okay, that is, you know, it is about safety, it is about, you know, being that guardian of that data, your data as a, you know, as a consumer. So it is a balance, and we try and do our best.
Yeah, I suppose the companies have to guard over that ultimately. One thing that's, I suppose, a personal question that is triggered in my own mind is, like, you've kept your skills so relevant, right? Because you've been in the industry a while. Is that a fair
30 description? Years this year, yeah.
I mean, is that something you just have had to roll with? Like, you've gone from being an electrical engineer, as you said, in the basement of Bank of Ireland in Cabinteely. You've gone right through to this cyber resilience stuff. Like, just you personally, you've done management, you've been a CEO. So how did you sort of stay relevant, Trey? Because I know it's an industry where if you don't know the latest computer language or you don't know the latest jargon, you can be sort of left behind. So how did you kind of keep yourself relevant through all these different transformations and company takeovers and all the rest of it?
Yeah, like it's a passion, you know, building an organization, working with really, really incredible people. You know, we're very fortunate to have top leadership within an organization with very, you know, very much niche specializations in their field. I'm not a specialist, I'm a generalist, and I just, you know, I love to do it in my spare time.
And when you go into a meeting, can you still talk to talk with them and they go into techie
language? Yeah, but they know I'm superficial. If they throw out a couple of buzzwords, a couple of acronyms, you know, they can catch me out. So
okay, well, I hope they don't catch you out too much, right? What kind of people are going into this whole cyber world? Because we'll have a lot of listeners saying, oh, that sounds like an industry that might be younger, leaving college, etc. What are you looking for? Is it just pure technical ability or is there something else there?
Look, we actually just initiated our first cyber graduate program. We were taking in 10 graduates into our Dublin office here on the 1st of January. But we're looking for anybody with a kind of a numerate background, ultimately. They've got to be able to...
Well, that's me gone, right? Me and my producer are out already, right?
Yeah, so I mean, you do need to have that kind of technical mindset. You don't have to have the skills. We'll train you with the skills. You know, that's what we have to do in industry.
I would have thought an eye for detail is absolutely...
Absolutely.
Picking things out. And why is that doing that? Yeah. That's a bit strange.
Yeah, and that's where the numeracy comes from, okay? You do need to be very, very process-orientated. You do need to be able to spot kind of, you know, irregularities, you know, what's going on in the, you know, in the customer network.
You probably need to be a bit paranoid. It helps.
It does help, yeah. It does help for sure.
All right, listen, fascinating story. You've had a fascinating career, personal career, and then, as I said, all the corporate developments. We don't have enough time to get through all of them. I know you've had a recent deal with a private equity firm, Corton Capital, which you could just briefly mention because we're under pressure of time. But to get up to 970 staff from where the company started, bringing different sort of firms together, is very impressive. But for the moment, thank you for joining us in our executive chair. That's Steve McNicholas, who is the CEO of Echo. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you very much, Emmett.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.